Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and across the other side of the microphone, I'm joined by my cohort, Mark Keane. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Rob.
What's happening in your world? I think there's a trip in the very near future for you.
Very near. So, literally tomorrow morning. So, we're recording this podcast on a weeknight. And the next morning of this, the recording, I'll be jumping on a plane, a Boeing 777, in seat, I think, 29D? No, H, which is an aisle seat in the exit row because I'm ultra, ultra tall. Heading off to the MVP Summit in the US.
And that'll be your first one. That'll certainly be an experience, I would assume.
Very first. I'm a bit flustered because...
Why is that?
Oh, just busy with everything. And not only that, the event for the MVP Summit, it's like... See, I didn't really know, but it's actually like an Ignite. There's a whole bunch of different sessions that you... say that you're going to go to. It's like an agenda. You build a... It's like a session builder online. It's the same as like Tech Ed and Ignite. So basically, it's the same thing. So I go through that. And see, I didn't realize that. So now I've gone through and sort of allocated what sessions I'm going to. But then during the whole summit, there's evening sessions to go to. There's catch-ups. There's social events.
It's the bar sessions. I think that's what we're talking about, isn't it? Have you got those marked in your planner as priorities?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's inevitable, no matter what. But there's also... We're going over early to catch up with some folk at Microsoft. We're going over tomorrow because it doesn't start till next week, the actual summit itself. But also, too, on the Saturday, we're going to take a little bit of free time and go and see the Boeing factory in Seattle.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. It's a good place to be.
Have you been there before?
Yep, been there a number of times. There are a couple other places I can refer you to in Seattle that are worthwhile seeing. There's an underground tour. That's a very interesting one as well. So, yeah, there's plenty to see and do. And make sure you do the typical touristy thing and go to the top of the Space Needle. So you've got to tick that off your to-do list as well.
God, there's heaps of stuff to do on the one day.
Exactly.
Well, we're leaving one day to do personal stuff, but I don't know. We'll see how we go. We might be able to squeeze something in midweek in amongst the social occasions.
Yeah, I'm sure you will be. And like I said, the Redmond campus, obviously, if you haven't been there before, that'll be a big thrill to actually go to the home of Microsoft land and go down Microsoft Way and turn on Bill Gates Drive and then,
Is there really Bill Gates Drive?
I'm sure there is somewhere.
He's still the richest man in the world, isn't he?
Yep, recently I read that. Yep, still the richest man in the world. So it just goes to show you that software will eat the world as it still is doing. So good news for Bill there.
Yeah, well, we'll get to see his legacy when I go over there and the campus. The only thing I've seen of the campus are photos and videos and that sort of stuff with Brad Anderson with those lunches that he does on YouTube when he takes Scott Guthrie out to lunch and talks about what he's doing in his lunch break with Azure. Have you seen those videos on Channel 9?
Yeah, I've seen those, YouTube? And he's just releasing a new series. So he stepped up to a new series, got a new car, new guests. So that's all been refreshed and redone. But I think speaking of Azure, what can you tell us that's happened in the world of Azure?
It's been a little bit quiet. There's not too much I can talk about because now that I'm an MVP, it's all MVP. So there's nothing I can discuss.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's the end of the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Huh? I'm kidding. There's a few things. Azure backups now support encrypted Azure virtual machines using the portal and PowerShell, which is, I think, is a nice little refreshing change. So it just means that you can back up your VMs in the encrypted state that they are in. Also, too, there's an article that's been published online, which I think is pretty cool. It's the best practices for enterprise IT departments moving to Azure. So it literally runs through everything, as in IaaS, PaaS, and the whole shebang of Azure. So virtual machines, websites, mobile services, the whole thing. So, like, for example, if you're an enterprise IT company or an enterprise company, not so much IT, but any type of enterprise company, you're thinking about moving to the cloud. Well, this onboarding guide is for you. It's a Word document just being released, and it covers everything from A to Z. It's quite detailed, goes into different scenarios, basically, like where you want to go and how you want to do it.
Different and ways I assume to tackle that we're going to put this in our show notes as well. So
Definitely. I think it's a great idea, because people are talking about competition out there and what they lack, without going into detail what the competition is. But Azure is definitely coming ahead in leaps and bounds. And I think the biggest challenge, you'd probably agree, Rob, is what's the best way to adopt Azure? And we've had this discussion before, and I've had this discussion with people at work before, is what's the best way to start with Azure? A lot of people say that backups is the best way to start, and site recovery, because it's fairly straightforward. It's no change for your existing infrastructure. But the other side of that is virtual machines, and virtual machines are what people are used to, because it's literally a virtual machine and your remote desktop to it. It's fairly straightforward. It's IaaS, you control it, and you can easily set up a VPN between Azure and your on-premise network, or if you want to go even further than that, you can do Express Route. But I think that's what people can relate to, and what people can relate to, it's not a scary thing, because everybody understands how to remote desktop to a server. Well, if you don't, you shouldn't. I don't know if you'd be in IT or not, but you probably are remote desktoping into a server without even knowing it most of the time.
And speaking of competition, I see that Google is now announced today, I think, or yesterday, that it's opening its new cloud platform. It's basically its version of Azure is coming to Australia very shortly. So more competition, obviously. I think Azure, like I said, is coming up in leaps and bounds, but it certainly indicates that the big three, AWS, Azure, are now Google, a good place to be for a lot of people. And I think the Microsoft solution wins based on the identity. The Azure Active Directory, I think, is the real winner here for those people, especially those people in the Microsoft environment. So
Visual
again,
Studio
very,
as well.
Very interesting that this is the way it's all going. We're all going back to mainframes, it would seem.
Yeah. And Visual Studio, I think, as well, Rob, if you're a developer, you can easily develop and push stuff into Azure with the SDKs.
Yes, good point. So, again, I think it just depends. I think, like I said, there are many different ways to get into Azure. There are many different options, a huge beast. For most people, like I said, backup probably is the easiest way to get started, but there are virtual machines. There is virtual networking. If you want to swallow something a bit different, there's machine learning, there's logic apps. Basically, there's something for everybody, including developers, websites, WordPress people, everything. So that makes it intimidating, but that also, on the other side, means it's a huge opportunity and easy to get into, especially if you're a Microsoft partner, because you will get internal use rights, which gives you recurring credits every month. So if you're not using those credits, I think you and I would certainly put our hands up for people to send them our way, because we can certainly make use of them.
So I'll be taking my microphone, the one I'm on now, the Rode NT-USB microphone, which is, I fully recommend it. We've got people at my work who've got the same microphone. Other people have bought the same mic. I know, Rob, you've got the same mic as well. And it's a very good quality mic at a really good, awesome price. I'll be taking that with me over to the US. The plan is to catch up with as many people as possible, social occasions, and get enough people recorded as possible for content. And we will be playing as much of it back, if not all, on the podcast moving forward.
Does that mean that we've got to have the Skype translator so we can convert from American back to Australian?
I wouldn't say that too loudly.
Too late. It's all on tape now.
The other side of that is we go over there, Americans love, especially the women, they love men, Australian accents.
Well, I think also it's very interesting. I think that, you know, we hopefully have a large international audience or growing international audience, so it makes sense to bring on some people with some other accents besides our own to give us a bit of diversity. So looking forward to all that, and I think you should come back with a lot of content there and going to the belly of the beast, so there should be plenty of opportunity to actually go and get some good interviews and ask the tough questions. So we'll wait and see what happens, obviously, when you get back. Anything else on Azure Side there?
Well, no, not really, but I mean, I've got my phone with me, and the phones these days have got really good microphones, so I'll have a battery backup pack for it, so whether I've got my microphone with me or whether the phone with me, I'm fully armed, and we'll try and get all the information as possible.
What's your Snapchat address so people can follow you on Snapchat while you're doing this?
I don't have Snapchat, but I've got I've got Twitter.
Okay, we've all got Twitter.
I've got be following me on Twitter, I'll be taking lots of photos and tweeting as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Great.
But we'll be, I think what we'll try and do is we'll probably schedule a podcast recording while I'm over there, because we'll try and keep up the weekly rhythm.
Yep. I would say. Again, that'll probably work in our normal time zone, so I think we can accommodate that. It shouldn't be too difficult. The good thing is you'll be going to the land of bandwidth, so bandwidth shouldn't be a problem for you, so makes it nice and easy.
So what have you been up to lately?
Still running around doing a lot of presentations around Azure, building some Azure boot camps.
Hang on, I thought I was the Azure MVP.
Yeah, you certainly are, but it doesn't mean that us plebs can't do Azure as well as PowerShell. So, again, it is an open platform that anybody can subscribe to and use.
The more the merrier.
The more the merrier, that's right. I'll certainly come up with some tough questions for you. I know that I've perplexed you a number of times, so watch out for some more of those. So my stuff is generally aimed at the SMB crowd. I'm still typically applies all the way up to enterprise, but typically now focused on helping people understand the move from on-premises, things like small business server, into Azure environment, consuming things like virtual machines, virtual networks, backup, and so on. So that's certainly keeping me fairly occupied at this stage, but obviously keeping up with the Office 365 news as well. So if you haven't heard, today's the day that Dynamics 365 has gone to market, which again is a very big step. I think this is one of the key products that we'll see in Australia, at least in the new year, available in the US as of today. We expect to see a very big uptake of that when it does hit our shores. Gives you basically a integrated CRM, accounting package, those sort of things for a business under the Office 365 umbrella. So I think this is going to be pretty big. And given the integration with products like Office 365, it's getting to a point where I think you could just about run your traditional business completely in the cloud on the technology. So that's pretty cool. Something else that's also gone GA is Power Apps. So Power Apps is a way automate processes, things like when emails come in or monitor Twitter feeds. Again, it's like a if this then that or a Zapier. So that has also gone GA, which is great. It means we can start automating a lot of Office 365 tools. And one of the other things we're beginning to see a lot of now is the integration and the improvement of the Outlook for iOS app. So Microsoft bought the Sunrise company and basically shut it down, but is now moving all the technologies into, as a first step, its iOS version of Outlook. So that's becoming easier and easier and better to use. And we should see those updates also flow into Outlook for Android very, very shortly. So
Tell me more about that, because I'm interested, because the Outlook app for iOS, what's the Sunrise part?
Basically, especially on the calendaring, I think that's the new part they rolled out. So it makes it easy to schedule calendaring and those sort of add-ons advantages. Normally, you would expect it just to be a web page, but there is some intelligence behind it. There's also, I think, you know, you've heard of the findtime.microsoft.com, which allows people to schedule appointments between a group of people inside or outside a business. So we're beginning to see all those productivity benefits flow into the Outlook app available on all the mobile platforms. I think that's one of the big differentiation points we're going to see from the Microsoft software is all these little add-ons for productivity coming into these apps, which you don't honestly see in, you know, other major players. You may see it in the smaller guys, but again, I think the user base Microsoft has gives them the the big advantage, and they can obviously look at their telemetry behind the scenes and work out what additional features and how people are using. So if you had a look, the iOS app on for Outlook is pretty cool. It does a lot of really nice things, along with things like the OneDrive app as well. So there's some really great apps, and interestingly going for the iOS above Android. So again, very interesting what they're coming out with.
So Satya Nadella basically said himself was he doesn't care what the platform is or what the end device is, as long as you're providing value, that's all that counts.
I think the thing is, Microsoft's realized that, strangely enough, it is a software company and it makes most of its money by selling software. That means it needs to run it on every platform that there is. And if the biggest player in the market is not a Microsoft platform, be it iOS or Android, Microsoft needs to be there. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And it also means that you don't have to go out competing on hardware. So we've also seen the Google Pixel phone come out recently. And it's very interesting to me. It would seem that Google is trying to emulate Apple by making a very, very expensive phone. Comparative, I think the price is identical to the new iPhone 7. So it's like, very interesting. It's obviously going for the premium end of the market, which again, may not be the best strategy which Microsoft pursued and sort of, you know, struggled with. So interesting that Google seems to be now on a bit of a march to try and compete with Apple toe-to-toe. So always something new, always something to comment about in the technology. It'll keep us busy, I think, for the rest of our lives.
You heard about the Google thing with Microsoft recently?
There are so many things. What specifically?
About the security flaw that Google put out in relation to Windows 10.
Oh, one of these things. Yep. What was it?
They had a press conference and basically stood up and said, well, there's a security vulnerability with Windows 10, which they announced. But then they said, oh, well, it doesn't affect Chrome on Windows 10. Chrome's totally safe.
Yeah, I think it's a bit sad when we're going tit for tat. But on the other side, I think that it's good that we have this competition, that we do drive things forward. I think that both companies perhaps are a bit guilty of trying to one-upmanship and make things bigger than what they are. But again, I think in the long run, I think the competition is good, keeps everybody on their toes. And again, if you look at you know, how Microsoft is doing, I think that has you know, very, very positive stuff. And again, you know, things like Windows 10 are making big strides forward, and anything that improves the platform, I think they would basically welcome.
Do you know what I think?
I think I'm going to hear it.
I reckon since Satya Nadella has come into power in Microsoft, the relationships have grown stronger between Google and Microsoft and other companies, example Apple and things like that.
Part of that is that obviously Steve Ballmer was a marketing dude basically, and Satya Nadella is a engineering dude. So Google being more engineering orientated, probably there's a synergy there. I think also too, Satya's a bit more, how would I say this? Yeah, probably a bit less confrontational, and looks at it as an opportunity. So again, you know, I think a lot of people use Google, they use them successfully. It's better to obviously integrate with that, especially the hardware, and gives you the benefit of being everything. And I think there's plenty of room in the market for multiple players. Microsoft's doing obviously very well in the enterprise and focusing on businesses. I think, again, the Office 365 product, which I think the last figures I saw are a 60% year-on-year growth, and Azure's 160% year-on-year growth, are pretty good figures that any business would be pretty happy with.
And we'll be finding out, well, I will be finding out as much more information as I can over in the MVP Summit, and sharing as much as I can without getting into trouble. So anything non-NDA, I'll be sharing.
Excellent. All right. Well, when the Department of Homeland Security calls for a reference, I'll know that you're fine. You'll be all good by yourself. There's no need for me to basically give you a referral, I would say.
Thanks for that. I'll put you down as the next of kin. Not.
That's fine. That's fine. Just make sure you come back safe, and it'll be interesting to see. You'll go over when there is one president, and you'll come back when there is different president.
Oh, that may be. That's a scary thought. Either of those two to pick from.
Well, very interesting to be part of that. Be very interesting to be part, to be over there when all of that happens and the focus that that will obviously generate. So that will be a very interesting discussion, and we'll see what happens after the event. Might end up being a bit of fizzer and everybody just gets on with what they're doing. So we could see that. But I'm sure it'll be very, very prevalent in the media, and you won't miss it on any of the TV screens. So,
tell you what, it's a pretty big event, because even the even some of the people from the from Australia are going over for it. A lot of the media. I was listening to Triple M in Melbourne this morning, and those guys are heading over into this week and broadcasting live from New York just for the election. It's huge. It's literally.
Well, I think
huge.
It's one of the biggest, media events there has been for quite a long time. It's a very interesting race, and it will certainly create, be very divisive, I think, in the US. I'll be very interested to see what the outcome is. And again, it's for media. It's like no need to wake up in the morning and wonder what the news is. It's a case of waking up in the morning and trying
listening to the Need to Know podcast. We'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got to be careful, but remember that you do need to make it back from the land of the free, home of the brave. So you need to behave yourself when you are over there.
You mean they could change the laws with whoever gets in, and all of a sudden, we love Australians too much, you're not allowed to leave.
I'm not saying anything, but I'm not the one travelling, so. Hopefully you've got all your forms filled in, all your dots crossed, and remember to give your fingerprints at the border.
All righty. We should get into our guests.
Who we got for this podcast on the other side of our little conversation here?
All right, a little bit of a quiz. We've got a guy from Microsoft by the name of Trinad out of India, and take a guess what his job title is.
It's probably Program Manager for Azure IaaS Backup. How about that? How's that for a stab in the dark?
Yeah, he is. Wow. You know,
it's almost as though you're
everybody at Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Good guess. All right, so it's a little bit tiny different. We've got we've done this we've got Trinad in, and we've also leveraged the help of Stéphane Boudot from Vigilant IT, and we've recorded the interview to talk about backup and site recovery with Azure. We're here with Trinad from Microsoft. Hey, Trinad.
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good, thank you. And we've also got a guest interviewer, Stéphane Boudot, who is an Azure MVP.
G'day, Mark. How are you going?
Very good, thank you. And we're doing a little bit different. We're here live in the studios of Vigilant IT. Now, we've got Trinad here all the way from India. And Trinad, if you want to give the folks an introduction as to who you are, where you're working at the moment, and stuff like that.
Okay. I'm Trinad. I'm Program Manager on IaaS VM Backup, and primarily from the Azure Backup team. And I'm from Hyderabad, the development center in India. And as a team, we will primarily focus on Azure Backup.
Okay, so IaaS and Azure Backup, and that's all done out of India. So if I'm correct in saying, India is the Azure Backup team and recovery team is the only team in Azure that's outside of America. Is that correct?
That's not true. There are a bunch of teams in India with respect to Azure development.
Okay. Okay. And I'll ask you another quick question in relation to India, because India is a little bit different compared to the rest of the world. Regions around, there's 30 regions at the moment for Azure around the world globally. Okay. And India is a little bit different. Now, India's got three data centers in India compared to Australia, which has got two data centers. Everywhere else is pretty much paired, and the way they do their storage, the geo-redundancy, is pairing. So you've got your primary copy in first region, and you've got a secondary copy. With three data centers, how does that work? Because it's the odd one out.
Okay. One of the data centers, which is West India, is primarily for some of the biggest financial centers and enterprises in India. So you can think of primarily India getting catered by two predominant data centers. One is South India and another is Central India.
Right.
And West India, not everyone can get access to West India.
Okay.
So that's how they kind of developed it.
Excellent. Now we'll come across to Stéphane Boudot, the Azure MVP. Now, Stéphane, if you want to give people, you've been on this podcast once before, I think prior to you getting your MVP award, but if you want to give the folks a quick introduction as to who you are.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Stéphane, as Mark already mentioned, and I've recently got my Azure MVP Very proud of that, actually. thank you. So, I'm a solutions architect here at Vigilant IT, and I'm focusing primarily on hybrid clouds, so anything related between your own data center and Azure.
So you were telling me a story at the traffic lights just before about you were out at this meeting today, and you walked in and somebody introduced you as an Azure MVP, and what was their response?
They actually said, "Oh, I'm very honoured."
Very honoured. Well, I can say the same thing. We're very honoured to have you here on the podcast, and Trinad. Now, if we want to kick off, we're going to be talking about Azure Backup. Now, Stefan was saying just before we started recording this that Azure was thought of by somebody as just websites, and that's it. Because that's all it is, right?
That's not true.
No, exactly right. No. So we're gonna sort of talk about, I think, Azure Backup, which is a good way to, if you don't have Azure at the moment, you've got everything on-prem, it's a good way to consume or start consuming Azure, I would say. So let's get into it. Stefan, if you want to sort of kick off with the first question.
Yeah, so since that, you know, person that actually thought it was just website, I thought it'd be a good idea to start off by if you could tell people, you know, what is Azure Backup, so that they get a better understanding of what the product is. Okay. And how they can use it.
Okay. So you can think of Azure Backup as a kind of a service which actually enables you to back up to the cloud and in the cloud. So cloud is not just websites, it's a kind of more of a platform which kind of enables you to do more and kind of get rid of your infrastructure requirements and pay as you go and kind of infinite scale. So we are thinking of providing the same kind of capability with the cloud for the backup scenarios. So if you look at the like how the backup evolved over the time, there are like kind of inflection points in the history, like virtualization is one inflection point. And we are in the era of cloud where there is a inflection happening there. And we want to look at the cloud as a kind of inflection point and what it means to apply that same thing to the backup. And if you think of some of the approaches which people are using cloud, one is a kind of a dump storage where I just put my backup storage to the cloud, but that doesn't take away your software licensing cost, or you need to still worry about some of the egress cost, and then you need to worry about how can I send data to the cloud. The second approach which people are using is kind of running their backup solution, take your backup solution which is present in on-premises and just run it in the cloud. Again, that's not a kind of a cloud-first approach, I say. The reason being, still you need to worry about the backup licensing, software licensing, and you need to worry about how to allocate virtual machines to your backup machines, backup software, and then worry about availability cell. So either you're not getting freedom from the infrastructure because you need to worry about all the infrastructure, or you're not getting the cloud economics because you need to still worry about deploying availability sets and then making sure that the virtual machine which you set up can handle all the loads. The right way to think about cloud is like, can I have a solution which can eliminate all my infrastructure problems and be cost effective? So that's how we are thinking about Azure Backup, where you'll be able to run the service natively in the cloud and write data to the cloud and then do much more with the data there. So if you're protecting to the cloud, and how can you monitor things, and how can you get insights from the data, and how can you integrate natively with other services? Because unlike the person who mentioned it's just websites, Azure is a kind of like there are more than 50 services. How can you integrate with some of the services? And for example, if you want to run some reports, do you still think about running a machine in the cloud and then setting up reporting services and all those things? If you're thinking about that one, you're not effectively utilizing the cloud. Mm-hmm. So we want to eliminate all those things and just focusing on doing some simple backup. So that's what Azure Backup is, a kind of simple and reliable backup to the cloud and in the cloud.
So is that like a backup as a service, effectively, that you're offering to people?
That's correct. So you can think of it like a combination of backup as a service and like some of the scenarios can maybe like restore as a service and then reporting as a service. Combine all of them, and that's what is Azure Backup.
And with Azure Backup, if I see that as a service in Azure, mm-hmm. you just mentioned to be able to back up all your other services within Azure, but can you also back up your servers on premises, for example?
Yeah, you can. There are two approaches when backing up to the cloud. One, you can have some local retention. You can put some of the data into local disk, or you can back up directly to the cloud. So we support both of them. And some of the enterprises want to have a copy of their data in on-premises, and in addition, they want to have more protection from the cloud. And if you think about it, a scenarios where you need to keep your data for, like, say, 99 years for some compliance reason, of course, you don't want to keep them in your on-premises and then worry about how to manage them. So cloud is a kind of very good solution for them. A couple of things in Azure Backup enables you to do that one. One is Azure Backup Server, which is a kind of a cloud-first approach of the Azure Backup, and second is a System Center Data Protection Manager. So if you have a system license, System Center Data Protection Manager is already with you, so you can start leveraging that one. And you might have listened to this one. Recently, we announced a System Center DPM 2016, and it brings a bunch of improvements.
Right. Now, just a question in quickly on Data Protection Manager. Can you tell us, for the people that don't know, what the differences are between Azure Backup Server and Data Protection Manager?
Okay. The way we imagine Azure Backup Server is a kind of cloud-first service running in Azure, which can cater to people who want to kind of minimize their local backup and then want to primarily put data into the cloud. That's why it's a kind of don't support the backing up to the tapes. And System Center Data Protection Manager, on the other hand, supports backing up to the tapes, backing up locally, and backing up to the cloud. So whatever your requirements locally, System Center Data Protection can solve those things. And the way we imagined Azure Backup Server is predominantly a kind of cloud-first, cloud-born service.
Right, okay.
I've got a question.
Yeah, go.
So I'm putting my hat on as a general company out there which has servers on-prem. Now, I've got a whole bunch of virtual servers, and what I want to do is back up the server in such a way so I can make use of what's called bare metal recovery of that VM. So I don't have to worry about, so if something goes wrong, I can, or if the server gets, if the C drive gets corrupted or anything else, or something comes along, I can sort of restore back that VM, operating system, reg files, the whole thing intact in one hit. What's the best way of doing that?
All right. So you can achieve that using either Azure Backup Server or System Center Data Protection Manager. You'd be interested to know with System Center Data Protection Manager, we recently announced support for VMware VMs also. So that means you can protect your Hyper-V VMs and VMware VMs using System Center Data Protection Manager, and you'll get your bare metal recovery BMR to the cloud or in the on-premises.
Okay, what about say a physical server? Say, I know not many people would have physical servers out there, but if I had a physical server, could I do a like bare metal recovery of that of that server as well? Yep.
Now that's very interesting about what you just mentioned there, the VMware component. So you're saying that you no longer need an actual agent inside of the VM. You can back up VMware VMs just through the hypervisor.
Correct. That's true. So one of the fundamental different approaches which we have taken in VMware VM backup is to make it completely agentless. And then, like, remember I was mentioning about cloud-first approach and then not worrying about your infrastructure. And one thing we have observed is people deploy agents and then need to worry about upgrading agents and things like that. So we completely get rid of that agent business, and we support agentless backup of VMware VMs in DPM.
Right. Okay. So if I does that mean that if you were to back up a VM from a VMware hypervisor, could you potentially restore it on an IPv server?
At this point in time, we don't have that capability. So kind of restore to the same kind of environment at this point in time.
Right. So if you back up from a VMware server, you have to restore it onto a VMware server.
Right. Right.
What about flat files though? If you back up files from like Hyper-V or some sort of like, you mean like as an example, you've got a directory called documents, for example, and you back up documents from Windows. Could you then restore that those files, say, to Linux or anything else? Maybe. possibly?
Maybe. I have tried that kind of approach, like moving away from Windows. I'm a Windows guy, so okay. I kind of use Windows most of the time.
Now, as soon as you said, oh, VMware backup, my mind starts to wander. And I thought, oh, hang on, is that like a great migration tool potentially from VMware to Hyper-V? See, I'm thinking here. Which we can't say that.
Might be coming. We don't know.
All right, so let's move on. In terms of storage, now you mentioned you can, with Data Protection Manager, you can still use Stape, but you can also back up to local disk. If you back up to Azure instead of to Tape, how does the storage work? Do you just use blob storage, or what does the system require to work properly?
So we back up to the vault. We call it a recovery service vault in the resource manager mode. So basically Azure has two different modes. One is a resource manager mode, which is a kind of new mode which is introduced in Azure, like pretty advanced one. And it has a classic mode which is kind of supported from long time back. So the resource corresponding to resource manager mode in Azure for Azure backup is recovery service vault. So let's say you're backing up to the recovery service vault. You can think of a vault as a kind of abstract entity, like a kind of, it provides you storage and it provides you the service which you need. Just the way you think about cloud, like a kind of abstract entity which gives you all the service without worrying about the internals of it. Yeah. It works in the same way. And one of the great benefits of protecting to the cloud directly using Azure Backup versus the tapes is you need not worry about some of the soft costs, like how to move the tapes. And then, for example, the scenario I mentioned, for example, if you want to store the data for 99 years or so, of course, you don't want to like worry about like when I store, like, I'm like, man, will I be there for 99 years? And like, where should I put these things? And you're predominantly eliminating all the worries about your soft management costs, and what you're getting is like directly backing up to the cloud, and then you can do much more things within the cloud, and then you can monitor the thing jobs in the cloud, and you'll get a lot of benefits with the cloud which is simply not possible, and simply the soft costs which are not possible in the with tapes.
All right, here's a question for you. Now, this is a question that my other counterpart, who normally does a podcast, Robert Crane, who's incidentally another MVP for Microsoft. With the Vault, now, the Vault is a location where you back up to, right? And there's two different modes. There's ASM, which is Azure Service Manager, which is classic, and you've got ARM, which is Azure Resource Manager, right? Now, with the Vaults, are they two separate Vaults? And if so, is there such a way of having one vault that sits across both classic and ARM?
Oh, that's a good question. So we kind of started with the classic vault, classic backup vault, and we had a vault for the Azure Site Recovery. So what we kind of observed over the days was customers were actually using both backup and site recovery vaults. And we thought, why not combine these two into one single vault? And kind of when we moved to resource manager model, we combined both of them. So from the same vault, you'll get both backup and site recovery capabilities.
Okay, so
and what's more, like in the site, in the new vault created, which we call recovery service vault, yeah, you can back up both your classic virtual machines and resource manager virtual machines seamlessly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, so what about if I started with backup, say, maybe 2 years ago, and I've got an ASM, because it's sort of a question I had from somebody else. I was meaning to ask somebody, and now that you're here, I'm going to make the most of it. They've got all their backups on a classic vault. Is there any way to migrate that across to the new ARM-based vault?
Yep, so we are working on that one. So soon, okay, we will have a capability where for the backup vault, we'll have a corresponding recovery service vault where all your backups will be seamlessly transferred. So you just click of a button and then backup vault.
So you don't have to worry about backing it all up again. You keep all the data up there, the retention, really, the whole thing.
No more seeding.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah, no more seeding, like just within like a few minutes, you'll have the corresponding recovery service vault available for you.
Cool.
All right, so you mentioned earlier DPM, Data Protection Manager. Now, Data Protection Manager 2016 has just been released along with all the other System Center stuff. So can you tell us what the new stuff is? What's new in 2016 compared to 2012 R2?
Okay. So one of the things which we really worked in DPM 2016 is a modern backup storage. What does that mean is we natively use the IFS technology, and we kind of also use the RCD-based change tracking. So what this enables is, for example, previous in DPM 2012 R2, if you migrated your one of the storage nodes, you need to run a thing called consistency check, and with the new API which is made available in Hyper-V 2016, we are leveraging that API, and then you need not worry about consistency check. So even if you migrate your storage nodes, your kind of backups are intact, and then you need not run consistency check. That's one improvement. The second improvement, as I mentioned, was the modern backup storage. What does that mean is Hyper-V came up with REFS and then REFS cloning technology, and we start leveraging that REFS technology. And what does that mean is it almost awards your allocate on write. So it's a kind of, you copy data directly, and then you just a kind of some manipulations you're done, and then you get done everything. So you almost avoided two IOPS operations. So it's a kind of almost like three times faster. Like instead of three operations, you're performing only one operation. So it's a three times faster. And that brings in some of the storage improvements also. So it's almost like 50% more storage efficient than DPM 2012 R2. And at the same time, we are almost supporting all the new features which Hyper-V 2016 is supporting, like storage spaces direct, and then ability to backup seamlessly of the BitLocker encrypted VMs. So like you name Hyper-V 2016 feature, we are compatible with that one from the day one of the release of System Center.
Nice. That's actually a very refreshed way these days with Microsoft, because it used to be that Microsoft would release an operating system, and then you would have to wait for at least 90 days for the backup products to catch up, or the monitoring products to catch up. So you're saying now with DPM 2016, it's all there out of the box right now.
Right. So at that scenario, so one more thing I want to talk about is a kind of rolling cluster upgrade. For example, you have Windows Server 2012, and then you want to upgrade to Windows Server 2016, and then you need not worry about bringing down your cluster, and then worry about, oh hey, what happens to my backup during the upgrade. So DPM 2016 natively supports backup of upgraded cluster. So as you upgrade your cluster, you're protected. So you need not worry about, hey, like, should I bring down my cluster or should I back up? So there is no trade-off.
That's a good idea. So you really, like, you pretty much don't have to worry about change control. I'm going to be shot down by saying this, but you could pretty much say to your bosses out there, or the change control manager, you say, no, the backups are all trusted. I don't have to worry about that. We can do a rolling upgrade to the latest version, and if all else fails, our backup plan is just restore.
Yep.
Perfect.
That's fantastic. And so the upgrade path from DPM 2012 R2 to 2016, I'm assuming that's literally go next, finish wizards, and all your backup are safe, and all your previous backup made with 2012 R2 are all safe, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's pretty simple. Well, that's a straightforward upgrade.
Hey, I'm just going to go out and upgrade our system now. That sounds awesome.
Actually, we got to finish this first. So let's dive into a little bit about OMS now. Very soon, I haven't told Stefan this before, but we're going to be getting Stefan back on the podcast at some stage in the near future to talk about OMS, the two pillars that Stefan is familiar with, about the recovery and the what was the other
automation.
One? Automation. Yes. So that's coming up very soon. I think before the end of the year, but OMS in relation to Azure Backup, if you want to just sort of tell the folks about sort of how OMS plays a role with the Azure Backup.
OMS is a great solution. Like, it's a kind of reimagines the hybrid IT management.
Actually, just quickly tell people what it stands for first.
Oh, okay. It stands for Operations Management Suite.
Correct.
It kind of re-evolutionizes your hybrid, the way you think about hybrid IT management.
Yeah.
It's a kind of cloud-first approach to hybrid IT management, where are your workloads are like don't worry about things. Like, I'm here to take care of those things. So we are like with respect to the Azure Backup integration, we do have a integration with classic resource of Azure Backup. So you can see Azure Backup vaults in OMS, and we are working to make recovery service vault available in OMS solution. So you'll be able to see what recovery service vaults are present and what things are protected and what things are not protected. Yeah, so we are working on the integration with OMS. Soon you'll have a pretty nice integration of Azure Backup Resource Manager resource in OMS suite.
And you can use it to monitor your backups and create alerts out of there and set up webhooks and all the fancy stuff that OMS you can do with?
That's true. So we already have a kind of alerting mechanism in Azure Backup Server kind of inbuilt today, where you'll be able to manage your IIS VMs alerts, backup failures, and then if there are any issues with the things which are protecting directly from on-premises to cloud. And we are going to bring all this rich experience into the OMS also.
Excellent. Yep. That's great. All right, so can you tell us, without breaching any NDAs, of course, but what's next for you guys in terms of the Azure Backup Server roadmap? Where to go from here? What do you guys have in store for us in the next, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months' time?
For Azure Backup Server?
Yes.
Okay. So right now we are working on bringing the VMware support to the Azure Backup Server. We know that customers love the DPM supporting VMware VM backups, so we are bringing that to the Azure Backup Server. And next thing is we'll be bringing the modern storage support, which is available in DPM 2016, to Azure Backup Server. So those are like two key enhancements which we are working with respect to the Azure Backup Server.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
Okay. So we better start looking at wrapping up shortly. But the question I'll ask normally at this point, and this is the normal question that Rob always asks, is about the folks that are listening. If they think it's a great product, they're hearing it right now and thinking, wow, we can sort of get rid of our tape backups on-prem, we can back everything up to Azure, all this sort of stuff. What's the best way for people to get started?
All right. So I'm assuming most of you guys have a laptop. So install Azure Backup Agent and start protecting all your things to the cloud. That's a simple way to try it out, Azure Backup.
Oh, good idea. How would you go on about that? Would you just go to the Azure website and is it easy to follow there or?
Yeah, just go to our documentation where it's like in a step by step with some few videos it's explained. Or if you're like the guy who kind of used Azure portal at least once, go and create a recovery service vault. It's pretty simple. It just asks for a name and location. That's it. Once you're in the recovery service vault, either you can, if you have virtual machines, can backup directly. There's a big button, press backup over there, you see, and just click on that one, and from there we will take you to the right solution. Don't worry about it. We have purely guided experience over there.
So I can install it on my Surface Pro 4 in front of me right here, and I can sort of like push it to where my files are, and it can just happily back those up. Will it do all the stuff that we're used to, say full backup to start with, incrementals and differential backup and all that sort of stuff?
That's a cool question. So the first one, as you know, it's a full backup, and after that everything is incremental, and you need not worry about getting corrupted and things like that. Don't worry. Give it to us and then we will take care of all the things. So after the first backup, everything is incremental.
What about if I had a 1 megabyte Word document, or actually no, Mac, let's say I had a 5 megabyte Word document, and obviously that was backed up, right? I opened up that 5 megabyte Word document, I changed one word inside of that document, so that one word probably would have been 1 kilobyte out of the 5 megabytes, and I saved it and closed it. Would it back up that document 5 meg or just that 1 kilobyte that I changed?
So it will back up, so the 5 megabytes might be split into multiple blocks.
Right.
So whatever is a granular block, we will back it up. So it will be level. It won't be 5 megabytes. So it will be pretty close to your 1 KB, that one word. So that's how we save pretty big on storage and then the network.
And data.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
And there's a compression as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a compression
inside of Azure.
Yes.
What's the expected compression? I know it all depends on the data, but what can you expect? Can you expect just 5%, 80%? What's the range of?
All right. So sometimes we have seen compression in the ranges of 40 to 50%.
Oh wow! Nice.
Yeah.
You're saying that for some data, if you have a gigabyte, it's only going to take 500 megabytes in
that's data. True. That's
cool.
So we want to make it as cheaper to the customers as possible. And that brings a pretty interesting point about the pricing.
Yes.
If you look at the pricing, it's almost like a kind of a cup of a big coffee. That's like $10 per instance, and up to 500 GB is counted as one instance. So you can back up all your Surface at a price of one big cup of coffee. That's it. And we have some storage cost for the backup, and which is in line with Azure storage, which is pretty cheap. So
okay.
It has a power to show your great, great, great grandchildren your photos at the cup of coffee.
Yeah. All right. Well, we better wrap it up. Trinad, thank you very, very much for your time.
Sure.
Now, Stefano, got any final questions?
No, I'm good at this stage. I think we've got a good overview of what Azure Backup is.
Yes.
And how to get in there. I mean,
how to get started.
I would definitely suggest anyone listening out there to go on their laptop and just install the agent. You're only paying if you're using it anyway. So why not just throw some data in there and play with it, see what happens?
Yes, it's good luck, especially with the crypto locker virus that is floating around.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Perfect. All right, Stefan Boudot, thank you for coming on. As always, and Trinad, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, folks. Thanks.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.